Uncle York's a fine old feller, gone to be our storyteller. Been around for a century, keeping an eye on you and me. A poking here and a poking there. He's got a pine tree for his hair, ticker tape for an artery, engine sitting on his knee.
I'm your storyteller, Uncle York. I've been around a long time. My eyes have seen everything that's ever happened in New York State. I'm craggy and old. I watch the Dutch moor their ships in Manhattan. I help the vineyard planters of the Lake Counties. I help cut the white pine of the Adirondacks. The story I'm going to tell you today has been produced and transcribed by the New York State Department of Commerce, dedicated to the men and women everywhere through whose courage and enterprise we enjoy our freedoms, blessings. It all happened on account of a billiard ball, this thing I'm going to tell you about. You can laugh. Well, it's kind of silly. But on account of a little billiard ball, right here in this country, we're speaking a new language.
Acetate. Take a light.
Styrene. Formica.
A synthetic language. A terrifying, the tempestuous world of the chemists. The polysyllabic world of plastics. In the year of our Lord, 1837, nobody who looked across the peaceful face of New York State could possibly foresee the chemical world of 1953. Nobody, not even Johnny Hyatt. But that's the year he was born. Reading and writing and arithmetic he had. And that's all. John Wesley Hyatt was an individual, born in freedom and instilled with enterprise. He grew up about the same as any other small-town boy of his day and apprenticed himself to a printer. We find him in his mid-20s working in a small printing establishment in Albany. It was a rare day for John without a visit from his brother Isaiah.
Hey, John.
I'm back here, Ike.
Yeah, I thought you might like to see this newspaper. How'd you like to earn $10,000, Johnny?
Huh? Let's see it. $10,000 reward offered by Phelan and Collender, manufacturers of billiard balls. What the dickens? Due to tribal wars in Africa and decimation of elephant herds, ivory sharply curtailed. Reward for a substitute for ivory. Well, that's all very interesting, Ike, but what...
Well, you know how we were talking about inventing something to make money to start us off in some kind of business. You got a real gift for tinkering.
Just because I made a knife sharpener, you think I'm an inventor. Oh, sure, Ike. Where would you start in a thing like this?
Well, you think about it, Johnny. I'm serious. There's always a way if you really want something. I'll see you tonight, John.
Ike's words, "there's always a way," bounced back and forth in Johnny's mind. Absentmindedly, he continued in the printing shop for several more days. Till one afternoon, the sharp pricks on his fingertips reminded him he had neglected to coat his fingers with the stuff all printers used in those days. Still gathering wool, he wandered to a cupboard in the little back room, reached in the dim light for the bottle of collodion. But the bottle was overturned. The collodion had run out. The sharp, familiar smell was absent when he picked up the little bottle. But there, laying on the shelf, curled into a thin, transparent film, was the contents of the bottle.
Collodion. Collodion. When it dries, it makes a skin, a thin film, a coating. Why couldn't I take a ball of something and coat it with collodion? A ball of cotton or paper? Yes. Yes, soak paper in it. That's it. Roll it up in a ball. Let it get hard. Why, it might get almost as hard as ivory.
There it was. The tiny beginning of an idea. Simple thing. An overturned bottle of collodion. The tiny genius that sat smiling in the corner of John Wesley Hyatt's brain rubbed his hands. From that moment on, John read everything he could get his hands on. Anything on the subject of collodion. It was difficult for a man without any training in chemistry to light the dim way. So, The lamp burned late. And in Hyatt's tiny workshop, strange things went on. He tore paper into long strips, soaked it in collodion, rolled it tightly, still wet, into a clumsy ball. He watched it dry.
No, no good. Not right.
He gave up in disgust, time after time, then came right back to the workshop to try again. He explained the problem to his brother.
We have to find some way to thicken collodion, like taffy candy when it's still warm. Then we could mold it.
Well, maybe this will help, Johnny. Professor Stevens at Columbia University answered your letter.
John Hyatt had discovered one important fact by this time. That collodion, the stuff he used to coat his fingertips, was essentially the same as nitrocellulose. And Professor Stevens at Columbia was an expert on nitrocellulose.
Oh, the letter's not very encouraging, Ike.
Well, what's he say?
Well, he says nitrocellulose may be explosive. Dynamite to play with.
Hands off, huh?
Yes, but Ike, that's the basis for my whole experiment. I have to use it. Now, if there was some ingredient I could add so it could be molded, then when I heat it, put it under pressure...
Well, when you do that in a cannon, what happens?
I know. Bang, bang. But I've been careful.
It ain't worth it, John. You toss the collodion idea right out. I don't want to have to write Ma and Pa you've blown yourself to kingdom come.
Many wars were to be fought with the very stuff young John Hyatt was messing around with in his little workshop. The highly explosive material used in cartridges and shells. But in his case, perhaps ignorance was bliss. He had tried most of the things on his workshop shelf. Everything on the medicine shelf. He worked night after night, his tiny shop pounding with the noise of the crude steam engine. He tried and failed. His brother had said,
"There's always a way if you really want something."
So John kept monkeying around. Then one day he saw a bottle of camphor on the druggist's shelf. It was something he hadn't tried. Perhaps this was it. But to make things more difficult, he had to work in secret. Ike had been very strong-minded about the dangers of nitrocellulose. Working alone, John rigged up a hydraulic pump and a steam-heated press. Heat plus pressure plus nitrocellulose plus camphor. There was the formula. The untried. The unknown. That forever tickled his genius. This might be the elusive substitute for ivory. It was a Saturday morning, dark and forbidden. A fitting day to play with death. John's brother was there at the workshop, not realizing what was going on. John called him over.
Ike, will you run an errand for me? I need more camphor. Get me 50 cents worth at the druggist's. And we're going to run out of wood for the steam engine before long. Would you take the cart for another load?
John stood and watched his brother go. He wasn't afraid, exactly. He'd been messing around with dangerous concoctions too long. He did wonder if he'd see his brother again. Then he turned the valve on the steam pipe. The new mixture was in the mold. Nitrocellulose, alcohol, camphor. For a second, he stood watching the engine. Then suddenly feeling danger, he bolted for the house, ran inside, and stood watching from the window. Any moment, the tiny workshop where he had put in so many fruitless hours might fly into the air, exploded by the dangerous mess he had brewed. If it worked, success. If it didn't, death and destruction. John watched. Enterprise, curiosity. John Wesley Hyatt had a man-sized share of both. When after moments the crooked wooden bedroom stood intact, John ventured out of the house. First with caution, then recklessly impatient. He rushed into the workshop to see what had happened. He cut the steam. Cooled the mold. Then his heart in his throat, he opened the mold and found a hard, smooth ball. John Wesley Hyatt,
had made the world's first synthetic plastic, celluloid. That was the story. And there was a sequel. In 1914, John Hyatt, an old man, stood before the American Chemical Society to receive a coveted medal. The audience of distinguished chemists heard him say,
"Wasn't it lucky that I didn't know as much as Professor Stevens?"
Well, young John never did win the $10,000. No, the big celluloid boom began with something as everyday as false teeth. And it went on to 1,001 new uses. Hyatt's little celluloid company became the grandfather of the plastics division of the mighty Celanese Corporation. In no time at all, there were new plastics from Bakelite and General Electric and Eastman, DuPont, and Hercules. And now the plastics are in our automobiles, our planes, in our kitchens and playrooms, in our factories, on our backs, and at our battlefronts. The plastics industry, born in New York State, now make jobs for well over 100,000 men and women. All over our country. John Wesley Hyatt, if he could look across New York State today, might feel the old tingle of curiosity and enterprise. Might blink at the new things created by the freedom to experiment, freedom to try and fail, the freedom to succeed that has given our material world a whole new look. Like his brother Isaiah, if we are faced with the loss of natural resources, a need for something new, we must remember to say,
"There's always a way, if you really want something."